Hello and welcome to the February 25th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. We've got a great show today. We're going to talk about the details about Final Friday activities at the Alaska State Museum. We'll also talk with one of Aware's 2014 Women of Distinction, Patty Owen. Allie McCart of Indigo Editing and Publishing will highlight her upcoming workshop, writing workshop, next week. She's doing that for 49 writers. And we'll learn about the Region 5 basketball tournament. That, Writer's Almanac, Birdnet, music, and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation is waiting to get its gaming compact approved in New Mexico. As Tristan Autone reports, Navajo officials are nervous about investments as the current agreement expires in 2016.
It's the second year in a row that New Mexico's legislature has failed to negotiate a gaming compact with the Navajo Nation. The deal would have allowed the building of additional casinos by the tribe and keep those casino doors open until 2037. With no compact, Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley says expansion, improvements, and investments to already existing casinos will have to be shelved.
The whole plan is just put everything on hold. Very uncomfortable feeling at this point in time. We need to improve some of our casino to attract more players to come to our casinos and so on. So it's a big, big problem. These are people's casinos, and it hurts.
Shelley says the nation is considering a number of options, including taking the state of New Mexico to court and waiving sovereign immunity. Lawmakers and other local tribes express concern that more casinos could hurt the state's gambling industry. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Tribal members on a White House climate change task force recently gathered in California. Carrie Young reports on their work to address climate change.
The meeting was organized to provide an opportunity for tribal leaders in the region to discuss the impacts of climate change on their communities. Organizers also hoped to gather recommendations for dealing with four key pillar areas: community health, disaster preparedness, built systems, and natural resources. Karen Diver is a member of the Climate Change Resiliency Task Force and the chairwoman of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. She says the goal of meetings like this is to help the administration build on the many good models of preparedness that are already in place in Native America.
It was not just focused on what can the feds do for us, what do we know our strengths and best practices that some tribes have already developed. So from that point of view, you know, it was really a fun thing to be a part of in tribes exercising their self-governance.
About 15 tribes attended this session along with senior members of White House staff. Diver says the task force will continue their Native American outreach plan through a series of four webinars and listening sessions. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
Alaska's largest Native organization is asking for help in efforts to protect voting rights. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Alaska Federation of Natives is already campaigning to restore voting protections struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court last year. Speaking at a Native Issues Forum in Juneau, President Julie Kitka asked for regional help.
We need letters, opinion pieces. We need the full weight of the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood.
The organizations have a 100-year history of advocating for Alaska Native rights, including voting. ANB Regional President Bill Martin says the organizations are behind the effort. The Federal Voting Rights Act used to require Alaska and some southern states to get pre-approval for redistricting plans. That led officials to set some election district boundaries so they include significant Native populations. That's the part of the act the U.S. Supreme Court struck down. Bipartisan legislation proposed in January would restore some of those provisions. AFN's Kitka says it won't do any good here.
At this time, we're not included in that amendment. In fact, Native Americans get no protections under the formula that they used.
That's why her organization is seeking statewide support for changes to the act that would include Alaska Natives. For National Native News, this is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
In February 1835, Baptist missionary Jotham Meeker began printing the Shawnee Sun. It was the first periodical publication in Kansas and entirely in a Native language. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's Tuesday, February 25th. If you were expecting the dulcet tones of Scott Burton, I'm sorry to disappoint. He did the show yesterday, so I'm sitting in for him today. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and you are listening to KTOO News Juno. As for the weather, it's sunny, highs around 37, northeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight becoming mostly cloudy late, lows 19 to 28. Tomorrow decreasing clouds, highs around 38, sunny again. Wednesday night partly cloudy, Thursday partly cloudy, and Thursday through Saturday night clear, lows 19 to 29. Winter has arrived and it is glorious in the capital city. Speaking of the capital city, the Alaska State Museum is one of those many institutions that's a fabric of our town, and in the studio with me right now, and Jeff, is the Deputy Director of the Alaska State Museum, Bob Banghart, and Lisa Galesik, who is the Visitor Services Director. Welcome both.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I have certainly heard about what's going on with the Alaska State Museum, and you're having a big party this Friday night, final Friday, but can you tell us the official story of what is going on with the Alaska State Museum?
Well, what's precipitated this is the construction of the new State Library Archives and Museums building, which is what you see when you pull into the parking lot at Foodland and can no longer see Mount Roberts. And we've been in construction now for a little over a year, and we got two more years to go. And in preparation for the finishing of the main building, we have to remove the current building. The new building is 180,000 square feet, including the parking garage down below, and the current building is 24,000 square feet. So the new building essentially is five times larger.
So that new building is going to expand right into where the State Museum is right now?
Correct. What we're going to be doing, what they're building right now is just the vault, the first floor and the second floor for the collections rooms. And then the T111 that you see is the temporary wall. When we remove the collections from the current building and vacate that sometime towards the end of May, June, then they will remove that building and they will commence construction on the rest of the facility. So what you see now is about one-third of what's going to be there.
Wow, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is a very large project.
Right, and so this final Friday is essentially where we're just opening the doors to the public. The upstairs has already been deconstructed. It's already empty of exhibits, except there is a salon-style gallery where we've got material stored. And we're just letting people come into the building for one last look, and then after that we'll close the doors to the public and start to decommission all the exhibits and go about the work of packing up the material on display for transfer. We've been working on the material in the collections room for the last 6 months, getting it ready to transfer.
Wow. And I would imagine there is special ways to transfer.
There are special ways to do everything
museum
in the museum.
Yeah. So, and when you said salon style, what do you mean by that?
Floor-to-ceiling pictures on a wall.
Oh, interesting.
See, we had them downstairs in the collection storage area, and we needed that space. We also needed to remove the devices they were stored upon, so we brought them upstairs and hung them on the wall so they're out of harm's way, and then we removed those storage devices so we have more areas that we can pack crates.
Hmm. So the museum has been, there's been no admission all, there's been no fee for admission all of February, so it's free
since the first of the year.
Oh, sorry about that. So people could still go in and see what is in there right now,
mm-hmm.
And your hours are for the next 3 days?
We're open 10 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday, and, of course, until 9 o'clock on this coming Friday.
Yes, let's talk about the party. Before we get into the party, mm-hmm. I have a question. So everything's being transferred to the new building. The current building is being closed. So when will there be any kind of viewing of
museum?
Well, the schedule for the building, because it's going to be the library archives as well, so we'll be mm-hmm. bringing all the archival stories over and the historical library and the information services. The building technically is scheduled to be turned over to the state in January of 2016. We'll commence moving all the staff in, some of the associated collections, and commence building the exhibits. And we hope to have all of that completed by May of 16. So we'll have a grand reopening of the facility in May of 16 at the current schedule.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about this Vital Friday. What's going on?
Okay. So we're really celebrating an end of an era. The building was built in 1967 as a centennial project. Its official name was the Alaska State Museum Centennial Building. And it has existed for almost 50 years. The museum itself was founded in 1900, but it existed in several different buildings, and the city taxed itself 1% back in 66 and 67 to build this building as a official museum for the state. And it's closing. And with that closing, we realize that it isn't just a building, but it's a culture that's changing. And over that 50 years, for instance, we've put a timeline up surrounding the ramp that sort of features what has happened in that building from 67 to present. And there's been almost 1,400 volunteers that have volunteered in that 50-year time frame, and those are the ones that we have documented hours for. I'm sure we're missing some. We've had 300 employees that have worked in that building in the course of that 50 years, and they're listed. And then we've had about 450 temporary exhibits and changing exhibits in addition to our permanent exhibits, and all of that is sort of featured on this timeline. What we were hoping would happen is that the community would come in and also add their memories of the museum to this timeline. We want to gather that history about this place. Because although we look for a bright future, it's a changing future. We're going to be melded in with archives and libraries, and at this point we've been this sort of single entity all these years. So decided that we needed to celebrate that end of the era, and it will happen from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. this coming Friday, live music, because the folk festival actually started at the Alaska State Museum. Bob was a part of that for 8 years. And so we're having some of those early musicians and others come in and play. There'll be a couple of short little programs. We'll have everybody on the ramp, and Steve Henriksen, who's been our curator of collections for 25 years, he'll MC that really short program, just talking a little bit about the history, giving opportunities for other people with long tenure to speak about this history, and hopefully just have a good, happy celebration as to what this place has meant to this community.
There's a website that we've set up as well that people can go to and leave their memories or recollections, whatever. It's not a chat thing or anything. We're asking for identities, so it's not anonymous. We really want to, as Lisa said, we want to capture some of that history. And I think when you look at that list of volunteers, but you also look at the list of employees, etc., it does go back, way back, to the beginning. And I think it's really important to recognize that the need to capture history, to preserve it, extends beyond the physical presence of a building. And the building is, the current institution has been in 3 other places, and you know, hopefully it'll be in 3 or 4 more other places before it's all said and done. But the building we're building now is a 100-year building. It's designed to last that long and way beyond any of us here. And so it's important, I think, for people to recognize. It's not the physical structure that's going away or that we're creating, but it's just that recognition of the process of collecting those memories and recollections and objects and things that give definition to the period we live in.
Yeah, that was incredibly well said. So I couldn't agree more. So you hear it here. It's Final Friday at the current State Museum building. It is from 5 to 9, 4 to 9 on Friday. It's free. It's open to the public. So come be a part of an end of an era. And in a short time, there'll be the beginning of a new era.
And if we can keep some of the musicians that started the folk festival awake that long.
I don't think that will be a problem. I don't care how old they are. They're folk festers. Alrighty. Well, thank you so much for what you do for the community, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be back after a short break. It's 3:17 p.m. on Tuesday, February 25th. You've joined us at Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I am Joan Pardis, not Scott Burden, but he'll be back next Tuesday. And we were just talking about the museum, and that is Vital Friday, this Friday night, 4 to 9 p.m. It sounds like quite a party, an end of an era. And there's another party going on this weekend, Saturday night, 5:30 at Centennial Hall, is a WARES signature event. The Women of Distinction 2014, four women each year are nominated for extraordinary contributions to the world, and we have one here, Patty Owens. Hi, Patty.
Hi.
And we also have Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, the executive director of AWARE.
Hi, Joan.
Thank you for joining us. So Patty is a health and safety advocate. She currently works for the Health and Safety Program for Alaska, the Department of Education and Early Development. She has devoted her life to health education. In 2005, she received the Alaska Health Education Consortium's Award for Excellence in Health Education, and she is really dedicated to working with adolescents for healthy relationships. Is that true?
That's true. That's what I currently work on, to combat dating violence and bullying and that sort of thing in the schools.
That's great. Yeah. That is really great. So let's start at the very beginning. You were born and raised in Juneau.
I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you went off and maybe you didn't go off. Where did you get your
degree? I didn't go off. I actually fell into public health and safety. I fell into public health at the Juneau Health Center working at the Family Planning Clinic. And that kind of paved the road for me to go into public health and health education. And as far as safety goes, I worked at the Augustus Brown Pool for when it first opened, teaching Juno to swim.
Wow.
And then realized that swimming alone isn't going to save your life in frigid waters. So then was part of developing a cold water safety and survival program.
Wow.
But my my experience and learning has been much on the job. I've had many opportunities to learn on the job, so I actually caught up with my degree later in life.
It's an Alaskan success story. In Alaska, you have a passion and you have the skill set, and boom, you go and find yourself the career that's meant for you.
Right.
So let's talk about, why were you drawn to working with adolescents?
I've just recently been working with adolescents, but I have worked in preventing diseases and injury most of my career, promoting healthy lifestyles, prevention of diseases like cancer and heart disease. Yeah. And then I have my own kids.
On the job training again.
Want them to be healthy and safe, yes.
Yes. Okay, Patty, who nominated you to be the woman of this, one of the women of distinction this year?
Well, that's the great part. It's a double honor for me because my 24-year-old daughter nominated me. And that was a real gift from her. And I'm proud of her for taking the initiative. It's something that she pulled together, and I made Sarah Lynn show me the nomination letter because I was anxious to see what she said about me. And it was really beautiful and well written.
That's wonderful. Let's back up a little. Mm-hmm. So Women of Distinction, each year four women are nominated. Four women receive the award,
right,
and many more women are nominated for it. Can you tell us a little bit about what the award is all about?
Yeah. The award is honoring four women who make outstanding contributions to our community, often in the fields of working with women and children. And really, they're often people behind the scenes. You may or may not know them. They may be public names. They may be very private names. You may know about things that go on in the community, and you don't know who's behind them, and then suddenly we find someone behind them. It's really a nice, I think, and beautiful way for the community to come together to recognize and honor these outstanding contributions.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And that's this Saturday night at 5:30, Centennial Hall.
Well, the program begins at 7, but you're right. Doors open at 5:30. We have a silent auction. People are welcome to come and bid on items. We have a cash bar at that time and free soft drinks. And Abby's Kitchen is catering a plated dinner for us, and we'll get to hear from the four honorees.
And who are the honorees this year?
The honorees are, of course, Patty Owen, Noreen Otness, Carol Pitts, and Elaine Schroeder.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a wonderful mix of extraordinary women. So, Patty, how does it feel to be a woman of distinction, honored as such?
It's quite an honor, but the bar is set pretty high, I think. If you look at the past nominees, it's quite a group. So I feel like I should work towards being a better person every day, and know many other strong women in Juneau making the community a better place to live.
Yeah, and how lovely that your daughter nominated you. That
yeah.
is really, it's an honor like fivefold. That's just really lovely.
Right.
So the event is this Saturday, starts at 7, doors open at 5:30. There are tickets available, and if people want to get one of the few tickets that are left, how do they do that, Sarah?
They can contact AWARE at 586-6623.
Okay. Sounds,
to get a ticket.
Yep. Sounds great. Thank you both for coming in today, and thank you both for all you do for Juneau.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to Writer's Almanac, and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 25th of February, 2014. It was on this day, 1570, Queen Elizabeth I was excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church and declared a heretic, whereupon Parliament declared it treason to call the Queen a heretic, which put English Catholics in a bind. They had to choose between renouncing their loyalty to the Catholic Church or paying heavy fines for committing treason. Elizabeth had tolerated Catholics worshipping in private, but when Catholic rebellions broke out in northern England and Ireland, her government began persecuting Catholics, rounding up Jesuit priests and killing them on the grounds that they were conspiring against England with Spain. It's the birthday of Anthony Burgess, Manchester, England, 1917, diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor when he was about 40, given a year to live. He wrote at a furious pace, produced 5 novels during that year, and at the end of it, he didn't die. In fact, he lived for 30-plus more years, produced 30 more books, including the one he's most famous for, A Clockwork Orange. Eventually, lung cancer claimed him in 1993. Anthony Burgess, who said, "The ideal reader of my novels is a lapsed Catholic and a failed musician, short-sighted, colorblind, auditorily biased, who has read the books that I have read." It was on this day, 1919, Oregon became the first state to levy a gasoline tax. They had launched a Get Oregon Out of the Mud campaign to build better highways, and a Republican state legislator, Loyal Graham, hit upon the gas tax as a way to make the people who use the roads pay for them. Within 10 years, all 48 states had levied gasoline taxes. It's the birthday of Larry Gelbart, Chicago, 1928, who wrote the long-running TV series MASH, also the Broadway musical A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and the movies Oh God and Tootsie. It's the birthday of Frank Chin, Berkeley, 1940, author of The Chicken Coop Chinaman, in which he wrote, "I am the natural-born rag mouth, speaking the motherless bloody tongue, no real language of my own to make sense with, so out comes everybody else's trash that don't conceive. I am a Chinaman, a miracle synthetic, drip-dry and machine-washable." And it's the birthday of George Harrison, Liverpool, 1943, the youngest of 4 children of Harold and Louise, and the youngest of the 4 Beatles, joined the band when he was only 14. The other Beatles tended to treat him like a kid brother. He only got 2 tracks on each Beatles album, and when the band split in 1970, he put out a triple album, All Things Must Pass. His memoir, I, Me, Mine, came out in 1980, dedicated to gardeners everywhere. Here's a poem for today by Hayden Carruth, entitled 45. When I was 45, I lay for hours beside a pool, the green, hazy springtime water, and watched the salamanders coupling, how they drifted lazily, their little hands floating before them, aimlessly, in and out of the shadows, 15 or 20 of them, and suddenly 2 would dart together and clasp one another, belly to belly, the way we do, tender and vigorous, and then would let go and drift away, at peace, lazily, in the green pool that was their world, and for a while was mine. 45, a poem by Hayden Carruth, from his collection Scrambled Eggs and Whiskey, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Hi, I'm Tom Cosgrove. Last November, Pat McClear and I shared an evening of stories. Coming out, stories of action and reaction. It was a powerful evening with a standing room only audience. In case you missed it or want to listen again, K2 will be offering it on the air on Monday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. You'll also hear the Juno Pride Ensemble. Won't you join us Monday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. for Coming Out, Stories of Action and Reaction.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Our last guest, Patty Owen, she is one of the four women of distinction that AWARE honors every year. And I just want to tell you a little bit more about Patty. She was instrumental in developing the statewide Cold Water Safety Survivor Curriculum, Marine Safety Instruction Training Program, and the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association. She also spent several years coordinating community health fairs that provided free and low-cost health education and health screening in Southeast Alaska. She went on to work for the Alaska Division of Public Health, helping to create many new health promotion programs, and she also initiated the School Health and Wellness Training Institute. So Patty is one of the four women that will be honored this Saturday from 5:30 on. The program starts at 7. And tomorrow, Noreen Otness, another one of AWARE's Women of Distinction, will be on the show with Ken Fix on Juneau Afternoon. Also, just want to let you know, the Wednesday hike for February 26th is at the Eagle Beach State Recreation Area. It's an easy-to-moderate trek. Bring cross-country skis and or snowshoes and maybe ice cleats, just in case. Wear warm layers of clothing and bring plenty of food and water, and meet at the Boy Scout Beach Trailhead at 9:30 a.m. No dogs or firearms, please. Okay, our next guest is joining us by phone from Metlakatla. Her name is Allie McCart, and she is the president and owner of Indigo Editing and Publishing, and she's coming to Juneau next Monday to do a workshop for 49 writers. Hi, Allie, are you there?
Hi, Joan.
Hi. So how are you? How's the weather in Metlakatla today?
Oh, the sun's shining, which makes it really nice.
Yeah, it's unbelievably wonderful. It might even be wonderful when you get here on Monday. So let's talk a little bit about 49 Writers. That's a statewide organization that promotes the literary arts everywhere and also hosts a variety of workshops. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you're coming to Juneau next Monday the 3rd to do a writing workshop. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. We're going to be focusing on the materials that you present to publishers and agents when you're a fiction writer, and everything that you put into those materials to make a good impression. And so we'll talk about query letters and synopses, as well as first pages, the sample pages that you might send in. And then we'll talk to you about how a pitching session might go if you were to meet an agent at a conference, at a writer's conference, which can be fun but also very nerve-wracking because we're used to submitting our materials by paper or by email. So to do it in person, it's nice to have some practice for that. So we'll dedicate some class time to that too.
Okay. And it's 6 to 9 at the Jack in the gallery room. What's the name of the workshop?
Fantastic First Impressions, Fiction Intensive.
Okay. And so if people are interested, they could sign up at the 49 Writers website. You could just search for that and it will pop up. But, Allie, let me ask, who's your audience? Who's the ideal audience? Does somebody have to have, like, a 50,000-word manuscript in their back pocket?
No. Well, so the ideal audience is fiction writers. Your book does not have to be finished in order to take this workshop. It's information that you can take and have and use it later down the road when you're ready for it. Or if you've got those materials ready already, bring them to class and we'll workshop them in the class to make them stronger. And people can bring rough drafts or something too, even if they just hammer out a few notes the night before and can want to bring those to class, we can workshop those.
Okay.
And we'll have time to write in class too.
All right. And ideally people should come with their synopsis and maybe the first chapter of their project? Is that what you're looking for? Or if people sign up, what should they bring? Everything.
Even just the first page.
The first page.
That's great.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
So, Allie, let's talk a little bit about Indigo Editing and Publishing and your background. So what is Indigo Editing and Publishing? And you're based in Metlakatla and Portland. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, the company's headquarters is in Portland. Indigo is a firm of editors, designers, and publication consultants. So we work with a variety of clients, all the way up to the big publishers, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, for example, all the way down to independent authors who are publishing themselves, and authors who are preparing their materials to submit to publishers as well.
Okay. So let's go through that. So for a big publishing house, what are the services your firm would provide?
Typically, anywhere from developmental editing to proofreading. So
and what is developmental editing?
Sure.
Editing?
so that's often working with writers who are an expert in some topic but aren't actual professional writers. We'd be working with them. They've got their materials, but it's not really professionally written. And so we go through it and help with the structural development and guide revisions. Sometimes we've even actually done the revisions for the authors to turn it into a professional book that the publisher can work with.
Okay. And then, so you were saying everything from developmental editing to...
proofreading. So, and in between that is line editing, which some people call copy editing. So that's sort of, you know, the nuts and bolts of the writing, making sure that everything is grammatically correct and spelled correctly. And then proofreading is the final eye, look at the text before it goes to press. It also takes a look at the design to make sure that there's not a weird paragraph break that shouldn't be there. Those little elements that would make reading a book difficult, but that we often don't think about editing, including.
Okay. And then what do you do for your – so that's what you do for the big publishing houses and the established publishing firms. But what do you do for the individual authors, because self-publishing is such a big market these days?
It really is. So we guide authors who are wanting to publish themselves. We guide them through the process of doing it professionally. There are quite a few situations out there that where authors can sink a lot of money into it and not end up with a professional product and never make their investment back. So we walk them through making sure that it's professionally edited, professionally designed. We hook them up with a professional publicist, too, and we help them gather bids from printers to make sure that they're going to have a professionally printed book that's going to represent them well, too. And then we can brief them a bit on just etiquette in the industry, too, how to approach bookstores to ask them to carry their books, how to set up readings, what goes into a launch party for a book, things like that.
Okay. So that's a wide variety of services. It's unique to each client, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. So do you ever tell a writer, like, is there ever a time where you say, you know, oh, this isn't really a good idea and this isn't going to, like, how do you handle that? Because obviously not everything that's self-published is really ready for market.
Very true. My perspective on that is that no writing is wasted writing, but not all writing has an audience. So sometimes it's a matter of talking out with the author and saying, and asking, who is your audience? And then having a realistic discussion about whether or not the content is going to appeal to that audience.
That sounds great. And so your company was started in Portland. You're based in Metlakatla now, and of course, mm-hmm. in today's environment, you could be anywhere and work, because I'm sure most of your work is via the web, I would imagine.
Yes.
Okay. And you recently taught this class in Anchorage, is that correct?
Yes.
For 49 writers. And how many participants did you have at that class?
We had 10. And that was, I think it snowed 5 inches within the course of the class time, too. So to have all 10 registrants show up, I felt honored to have that they came out through the snow.
Right, and it was only a 3-hour class, so it was dumping,
right.
Obviously. All right, well, we wouldn't mind some snow on Monday, but we do want to get you in, and we do want the workshop to go. So once again, Allie McCart is teaching a fiction class. I'm going to ask her one more time to describe the class. It is Monday night, March 3rd, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Jack. You need to sign up at 49writers.org. It's a 49 Writers hosted event. If you're a 49 Writers member, you get a discount. If it's open to the public, you just have to pay a little more. If you're not a 49 Writers member, there's many, many, many benefits of becoming a member of 49 Writers. You could check that out at the website. And this is for fiction writers who have an idea or have their manuscript or have any in-between version of what I've just described to come and work on a synopsis, query, approaching agents at conferences, and also getting your first couple of pages to, I guess, the wow factor that people want to read more. Would you say that was a good synopsis, Sally?
I think that was perfect. Thank
okay.
you, Joan.
All righty. So, Allie, we're looking forward to you coming in on next Monday to Juno, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again. Also, do you want to talk a little bit about the Sledgehammer Contest?
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay, so you're the founder of that, correct?
Yes, I am. We've done it for 6 years. And it was founded by Indigo, and the idea behind it is that it is a writing contest that builds community both among writers and with other organizations as well. There's a scavenger hunt that goes into it. Writers can write as a team or individually. The scavenger hunt is to collect writing prompts, to be clear on that. We've had dozens of sponsors. Last year, our prize packages were worth $25,000. And last year was the first year that we opened it up to writers anywhere. Before that, it was to writers who were in person in Portland. And last year, we were able to put it, do an online version. So people did an online scavenger hunt and picked up their prompts and wrote their stories all within 36 hours. And we had prizes available for those writers from anywhere as well. And it turned out great, so we'll definitely be doing that again this year.
Right, and so you could check out Sledgehammer Contest on the web. But, Ellie, you had a lot of Alaskans, didn't you?
Yeah, we really did. And so because last year was the first year that we offered this online version, it was kind of a beta test. We really only promoted it in Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. And Alaska was by far the biggest representation for the outside of Portland participants, which I was thrilled about.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, yeah, there definitely seems to be like a writing renaissance of sorts in Alaska. There's been a lot of wonderful writers publishing some great, great work out of Alaska. So if you're remotely interested in the writing community, check out 49writers.org and Ellie's company, Indigo Editing and Publishing. You could find that and information about the Sledgehammer Contest, which takes place in the fall. And Ellie, thank you so much for joining us. And her workshop is March 3rd. Find out more at 49writers.org. Okay, Ellie, we're going to take a little break now.
This is Bird Note.
Northern saw-whet owls reveal we have much to learn about the world of birds. In fall, they migrate south from Canada and the northern states to find food and shelter. In spring, they head north again, traveling silently, in part to avoid being eaten by larger owls. Author and ornithologist Scott Widensall shares his fascination with these tiny creatures.
First of all, let's just get it out on the table. Saw-whet owls are cute. They're just a really engaging, appealing animal. But here's a species that up until the early to mid-1990s was considered to be rare in most of its range. My home state of Pennsylvania had it listed as a species of special concern. It's on our conservation license plates because everybody thought that this was a rare species. It turns out this is one of the most common forest raptors in North America, but they're nocturnal. Their entire migration takes place after dark. They're secretive during the day. They're easy to overlook. The advertisement call of a male saw-whet owl. If you play that at night during the migration, it will lure the migrating owls down out of the sky, and we string mist nets in the woods and harmlessly catch them, band them, take a few measurements, let them go. The numbers are amazing. Last year in Pennsylvania, we caught almost 4,000 saw-whet owls at our banding station. Sometimes we were catching 100 a night. And this is a bird that everyone thought was rare. I love saw-whet owls as an object lesson in how little we know about even the most common species of birds.
We have videos of these elusive owls. Check them out at birdnote.org.
Growing up in the village, my mom and stepdad smoked indoors. You could see smoke a few feet from the ceiling. I had pneumonia a lot growing up, and now I have asthma. Two of my five siblings picked up that habit of smoking.
Approximately 9,560 Alaska children are exposed to secondhand smoke in their homes each year. Protect your children. Don't smoke or allow others to smoke in your home or car.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast.
The 2014 Gavel Alaska Guide is now available for free on iTunes. The Gavel Guide is an app filled with explainers on Alaska's legislative process, including how bills get passed, and more often, quietly killed, profiles of all 60 legislators, and animations showing why caucuses are more important than party affiliations. The Gavel Guide is available for the iPad through the iTunes Store. Visit 360north.org for more details or a desktop-friendly version. The guide was made possible with generous support from Rockwell.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's the February 25th edition. It's Tuesday. It's 3:44 p.m. You're listening to KTOO News. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And in the studio is Christy Germain and Jennifer Neggs from Juno Douglas High School. Christy is the vice principal and Jennifer is the registrar. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi. So, Region 5 basketball tournament.
It's coming up
next week. So let's start at very basic. What is it?
So Region 5 is Southeast Alaska. And so this is the basketball tournament for actually the 2A, 3A, and 4A schools in Southeast Alaska. But it's not just basketball. It also includes the cheerleaders, the dance teams, and the pep bands. And they have competitions as well. So it's about 500 students who will converge on Juno starting next Wednesday, March 5th.
Holy moly. So 2A, 3A, 4A, what does that mean?
So that is the size of the school, basically.
Okay.
So the Alaska School Activities Association, ASAW, determines the size of the school, and then they play other teams from similar-sized schools.
Okay. So for argument, Juno Douglas High School is which category?
4A.
Okay. So that's the largest.
Yes.
Okay. And who typically do they play?
Sitka and Ketchikan and Thunder Mountain.
All right. Of course, Thunder Mountain. Yes. Okay. So this is the big basketball spring tournament event or late winter tournament event. Besides all that you just described, are there specific events that are cornerstone to these games?
Yes. So people who have ever been in the JDHS gym, you've probably seen the pennants that are around the wall, and they're listing the Region 5 winners going back a long ways, and then also the state winners are listed. The Region 5 tournament determines who goes to state, and we also, the champion is the 3A winner playing the 4A winner to determine the Region 5 champion.
Okay, who was the Region 5 champion last year?
Well, if it wasn't us, it should have been.
Somebody got put on the spot.
She's very good. She's just, not only she has the principal skills, vice principal skills, she's good at a pep rally, too.
Yep. I was a cheerleader in high school.
There you go. At Juno Douglas High School.
At Juno Douglas High School.
That's correct.
That's right.
So full circle here.
Yep.
So where do 500 visiting teenagers stay?
We actually, all of our athletes and participants in Region 5 are housing. Mm-hmm. Students. And Cricket Curtin, who's in our activities office, she's working on the housing right now. Sandy Wagner, our activities athletic director for the district, has been working a lot on putting on this tournament.
So this is a big thing.
It is a big thing.
It's a really big thing. And so for the seniors, it's, you know, seeing old friends and frenemies and so on and so forth. And for the people who are just joining, it must be very exciting.
It is exciting. We are looking forward. Thunder Mountain is also going to host part of it. The games will all be at JDHS. But Saturday, something that might be interesting to people, even if they're not basketball fans, the dance team adjudications, so dance teams and cheerleaders, have special tournament routines that will be performed. And that's going to be at Thunder Mountain Saturday starting at 11 a.m.
Oh, cool.
And there is a cost. It's $5 per person to get in.
Oh, cool.
And then other things, the basketball games actually start 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning. We don't know specifically who's playing what. This week and this weekend's games will determine ranking going into the brackets for the tournament.
So how do people find out about all the game times and so on and so forth?
Well, they certainly can call JDHS and ask for our activities office. Our main number is 523-1501 and ask, and then we'll be able, once we know the seeds and where people are placed, we'll be able to post that.
Okay. And I know that this is a foundational event for Juno, so it's not like I've been living under a rock. But let's say it's the first time and people really want to attend. Is there money? Do you have to pay? Is it really crowded? Do you have to show up a half? You know, what's the who, what, where, when, and why if you're not really familiar with
with it?
Well, we can start with the fact that you can get tournament passes.
Oh, okay. So this is Jennifer Neggs talking. Oh, yes. She's the registrar.
I am the registrar.
Okay, so give us the gritty details.
Yeah. So the money part, right, the part we all love. If you want a tournament pass that gets you into all the games for the entire tournament, an adult pass costs $55. A student is only $35. If you're only going to one session, because there's multiple sessions throughout the day, an adult individual session is $8. A student is $5. And if you're a child or a senior, it's only $3 for an individual session.
Okay.
And as she said before, the drill team adjudication on Saturday is $5 for everybody.
11 o'clock at Thunder Mountain.
Yes.
So when is the first game?
First game starts on Wednesday morning at 8 a.m.,
okay.
Wednesday the 5th.
All right. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And we'll actually, our gym will be hopping the last game Wednesday night, and actually each night starts at 8:30. So we'll probably have games going till 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Okay. So just come. And if you want to see a specific team is playing, you know when it is, do you have to get there early? I mean, is it like completely like sold out, there's not a seat, or does it depend on the game? Or?
It does kind of depend on the game. Those of you who've been to gold medal championship games, it's standing room only, and you're often climbing over people to get back to your seat. We would love to have that kind of support at our Region 5 tournament, but we don't typically have that large of a crowd.
Okay, it's families and friends.
Yeah, it's families and friends. And, you know, Juneau, we really are a Southeast community, so everyone has family in these different places. The schools that are coming, Craig, Haynes, Ketchikan, Metlakatla, Mount Edgecombe, Petersburg, Sitka, Wrangell, and then JDHS and Thunder Mountain.
Wow.
So they have, I'm sure, fan base in Juneau also and family members. And then as we know where people are placed, they can check and hit those games. And then by the championship game, which is we call the crossover game, kind of Saturday night, but then also Friday night might have some of those championship games. Those are more popular.
Okay.
And people are watching those better teams.
Is this both boys and girls?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, now I know the answer to this, but Christy, how's our teams looking? I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask.
You know, last weekend was our homecoming for JDHF, and we actually were not able to win any of our games. We do have some injuries right now on our boys' team, but the coach has motivated, Coach Casperson. Our guys were actually wearing special T-shirts this week, today, going into the Thunder Mountain games that we have this weekend.
Okay.
So we do have a good team when they mesh. That's good.
Great. What about the girls?
You know, I think our girls have been doing well. We didn't win last weekend when we were playing Ketchikan, but it's a good team.
All right. You heard that. So come on, Juneau. Come out and support your team. Come out. They're going to need some hometown ground here. So, all right. So that is what's going on with the athletics. What's the big news? What about academically? What's going on at the high school?
Well, you know, one thing I want to say about the pep band specifically, one thing that's neat that Region 5 tournament does is they do an all-star pep band, and then they also do a mass pep band. So on Saturday, the game that starts at 2 o'clock is going to have the all-star pep band playing, and then the game that starts at 5:30 is going to be the mass pep band. So if you've been in the JDHS gym, how we have that loft area, it's full and overflowing during this time because it's basically every pep band from every school, they get together and play.
Oh, my.
And that's a lot of fun, and it's really neat to see the kids working together musically, and it's fun.
That's great. That's great. All right, so it's all happening this weekend and all, well, no,
March
tomorrow.
5th,
yeah.
6th, and 7th,
March,
so a week from now,
week
and then
from
8th.
Now, all happening at Juneau Douglas High School, and then the Thunder Mountain, the dance team, doing their competition pieces at 11 o'clock for $5.
Yes.
On Saturday. So, academically, what's good?
You know, we're actually, our academic decathlon team just came back from the state tournament, and they brought back $7,000 in individual scholarships.
Woohoo!
And so one of our students won a $4,000 scholarship, so when she goes to college, because she was the top student in her category, another student got a $2,000 scholarship, a third student got a $1,000, and actually yesterday at school, they were walking around with their medals. They just did great.
Congratulations.
Yeah
we're
that
super
is,
proud of our Crimson Bears.
That is great news. Okay. And then you were saying something about courses?
Course selection time. So we're almost done our course selections at the high school. The eighth graders had just put in their selection for high schools
Oh, wow.
The other week.
Mm-hmm.
And so this week on Wednesday and Thursday, at 5:30. The eighth graders who selected JDHS will come to the JDHS library and do their course selections just like they're if they were high schoolers. And all those selections go in, and it helps us build a master schedule. So it's very exciting. It's the first time our eighth graders, who are rising freshmen, will be part of the Crimson Bear family for real. I mean, it's a very exciting time. There's lots of questions. Families are there. And it begins their high school career. So it's very exciting, and it's something we all look forward to.
Okay. All right. And when is graduation this year? Do you know?
I do. It happens to be May 25th, and there is... there are two sessions, and I think JDHS has the early session.
And do you know how many students are graduating this?
Roundabout. Hold on, I have to think about this. I should know this off the top.
We don't need an exact number.
Somewhere between 150 and 160. Yeah, that's this year. Last year we had less than that, but this year we have a good number.
That sounds
great. It's very exciting.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in. I know you ladies are really busy, and it sounds a little busier than most.
And next week especially.
Yeah. So that is next Wednesday starting at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. And if you want details about, oh, hey, I need to know when this team is playing, what do they call?
They can call the main line. Mm-hmm. Also check out our website. And then my understanding is that our JD video production crew is going to help live stream.
Oh, cool.
And that goes... through our website, and then the video production link and that tab.
That's great.
Yeah.
And what's that main line, Christy?
523-1501.
Okay.
It's the high school.
Well, thanks you both for coming in today, and thanks for all you do, and it's going to be an exciting time in the Old Town next week.
Thank you. Oh, man. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Okay, you are listening to KTOO News Juno, the February 25th edition of Juno Afternoon. It's 3:56 p.m. The weather is mostly clear, lows 22 to 28, except around 15 in wind-sheltered areas. Variable winds to 10 miles per hour, except north wind, 10 to 20 miles per hour in exposed areas. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs around 38. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows 17 to 24. Thursday, partly cloudy, highs around 39. And Thursday night, lows 17 to 23. Through the weekend, it is sunny, 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 highs around 35. Please tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Ken Fix will host. He'll be talking with representatives from REACH, Noreen Utness, one of AWARE's four women of distinction this year. Dove Gardenberg from NAMI will be here to highlight next week's Inside Passage program. And also people from Eaglecrest will be talking about the town downhill race this weekend. Thanks for listening. It's 3:57. All Things Considered is up next.
The last Gold Street Music Concert of the season is Saturday, March 1st at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. The performers are Colette Costa, DNR, Ed Schoenfeld and the Empty Oil Barrel Band, Band Together with Bob Banghart, and Dave Owens. Come join us at Resurrection Lutheran Church on Saturday, March 1st at 7:30. Tickets at the door.